Hi, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I am Tim. Welcome to the podcast where we take a lighthearted look at the dark side of history. Today we have a mystery, Brandy.
We do.
Yes, we're going to talk about the Laplove Pass incident in which nine hikers were in the Ural Mountains. You ever been in the Ural Mountains, Brandy?
I can't say that I have, Tim. Okay. I'm sure Chuck has.
I'm sure he has. In the Soviet Union, when they mysteriously perished, Brandy. And we're going to talk about some of the theories and what occurred there. This script was submitted to us by our good friend Jason Dykes. And, you know, he put some disclaimers in there about him and his sexiness and all that, but I'm going to ignore that. But we do want to thank Jason for the script. It's an interesting case, and we'll get into that. But before we do, I want to remind everyone that we are a comedy podcast. We use adult language, so if that offends you, then by all means, check out one of the other wonderful podcasts, true crime podcasts out there. There are many wonderful independent true crime podcasts. Please be sure to check them out. I am joined, as always, today by the very lovely and talented, a lady who is known throughout the land as Brandy the Benevolent, Her Majesty Brandy the First. How are you today, Brandy, if at all?
I'm good. It's the kids are on spring break, so I'm planning on working some overtime, so I don't have to be at home with them.
I see.
And
so, young Noah is off on spring break.
Young Noah is off on spring break, and he's pretty excited about that, and just kind of, you know, we're getting ready to get a bunch of snow, evidently.
Yeah, man, it's supposed to.
They keep changing it.
It was a foot of snow, and now it's like 6 inches. And
whatever. Whatever.
It's like spring, so I don't know what we're having.
It's some bullshit.
I agree.
It is bullshit.
So Noah will be on spring break next week.
Noah and Jacob both are on spring break next week. So we're pretty not. I'm not as excited about it as they are.
So are you working next week?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. I thought maybe you were taking off to spend quality time with your boys.
No, I spend quality time with them. I spend enough quality time with them.
All right.
I'm a very busy woman here. I'm very important.
You are?
I have stuff that I have to do.
You do very important things, and you can't usually be found.
Because that's the way I like it.
I see. We are normally joined by our partner, our co-host, the Colonel.
I want to make something clear.
Yes.
On the last podcast, when, you know, I, in air quotes, came in and then I had to leave. Yeah. Let me make clear that that was not me.
Okay.
Charles does a very piss poor impression of me.
Oh, so that was him pretending to be you.
Well, you were here. You know damn good and well I was.
I didn't encourage that.
I'm sure you did not. I'm sure you did not. But now, you know, he's not here today because he's off doing.
He's shooting at stationary objects. How challenging can that be?
For him,
Chuck is not with us today. He decided he was going to a shooting tournament.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, you know, I don't know why he's doing that, but.
You know, he lives in an urban jungle.
He does.
You never know.
So he won't be with us for this podcast.
I know you all are sad.
Yeah, but he'll be back.
Well, and that also means we might get through this in under, you know,
4 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You ready to jump into this this story?
Hit me.
All right. I've watched a couple of documentaries on this just to, so I was familiar with it. But as I said, Jason, this was written by Jason Dykes, so we appreciate all your help, Jason. The Laplove, I'm probably screwing that up, but The Laplove Pass incident refers to the unsolved deaths of nine skiers/hikers. Sometimes they hike, sometimes they ski. They probably hike uphill, ski downhill. That's what I would do.
Well, yeah.
If I were in their ski shoes.
It also makes them overachievers.
Yes, yes. In the northern Ural Mountains, and I know you've never been to the Ural Mountains.
I can't say that I have.
It's in the old Soviet Union.
What, it would involve hiking?
Yes. You're not a fan of hiking.
I'm not a huge fan. Nature and I have a tentative agreement.
I want to go trek. You know, trekking is just a fancy word for walking.
It is. Nature's dirty.
Yeah. Nature is dirty. It's all on you. These folks were out in nature, so it's their own damn fault, really.
Well, it. This is what I'm saying.
Okay. So anyway, the Dilatlov Pass incident occurred between February 1st and February 2nd, 1959. That would be right around Groundhog's Day, Brandy.
That's true.
Yes. In 1959.
I wonder if he predicted six more weeks of winter.
I don't know. Well, one of the theories is they died of an avalanche. So in that case, it was at least one more day of winter.
Well, right.
Now, this group was experienced. They were experienced in hiking. So they got the walking down.
Yeah, but were they experienced in skiing?
It said an experienced hiking group. Now, again, I didn't.
Did they wear tennis shoes?
Credentials?
Did they wear tennis shoes on their shoes so they could get through there?
They probably wore
tennis rackets. That's what it was. They were tennis rackets?
Tennis rackets, yeah. The old ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Or they may have wore Crocs. You never know.
Well,
I don't think Crocs were around in 1959.
I don't think they were. Never mind the fact that if they're hiking in the snow, that would make your feet a bit chilly.
If they wear socks with them.
Well, okay.
The experienced hiking group, he says they're experienced. I'm going to take Jason's word for it.
Yeah, whatever.
Take it with a grain of salt. Who were all from the Ural Polytechnic Institute, Brandy. Good old UPI.
Go Tigers.
They were members of they were part of this university and established a camp. They established a camp on the Kolak Sakala.
They should have been studying.
I don't know what the hell that is, but I'm guessing it's like a mountain.
Okay.
Because it has a slope.
Well, they established camp, so there's a flat spot somewhere.
Yeah, there was. So that must have been like their base camp. Okay. During the night, in the evening, when the sun goes down.
Sure.
Something caused them to tear their way out of their tent and flee.
Maybe they thought better of hiking.
Well, it seems like it. I don't know if they'd all come to that conclusion all at once.
You don't know. Groupthink.
Anyway, they took off from their campsite. Now, they know that it was done in haste because the hikers were inadequately dressed for a heavy snowfall and sub-zero temperatures.
Well, aren't we all?
Oh, yeah, but I mean, if you're relaxing nude in your tent, and all of a sudden, you want to put on a robe at least before you go out.
I don't know that you're in the freezing ass mountains and you're relaxing nude. I kind of feel like you should.
Those Russians are a little freaky.
I know, but I feel like you should kind of sleep in your clothes if you're out doing that.
Well, lesson learned because they were. I guess they were in their clothes, but they wasn't. Dressed to the.
Yeah, I'm dressed to go at all times.
Yeah. Well, I don't guess they were. Now, after their bodies were discovered, there was nine of them, remember? I think there's seven men and two women, if I remember right. So they probably, the women probably got a lot of action.
Jesus.
That's 4.5 to
That's
one.
What's important.
Four and a half to one. Great show. After the group's body were discovered, an investigation by the Soviet Union authorities determined that six had died from hypothermia, Brandy.
Uh-huh.
That means they were really cold.
Yes, that's
what
it means.
While the other three showed signs of physical trauma. Not drama, but trauma.
Trauma, sure.
Yeah, there's a difference.
Okay.
If you go into... I mean, really, trauma just means that you got hit by something, right?
I understand, yes.
I know all these medical terminology.
You are so good.
You go to a trauma center is that if you get hit by a car. If you're just emotionally drained, you go into a drama center. Or you do a podcast. Yeah, that's true. Additionally, another team member was missing their tongue and eyes.
That's no good.
No. You need the tongue, especially if you're going to talk.
Well, sure.
Podcasters need tongues because it's very difficult to do a podcast without a tongue.
I've heard that.
The investigation concluded, Brandy, that there was an unknown compelling force that caused the death of these nine individuals.
Well, that's some crack investigating.
Now, there's been numerous theories put forward to account for the unexplained deaths, and you're going to get into the theories.
I will.
A little later. But let me tell you, give a little background. 1958, a group was formed for a skiing expedition across the northern Ural Mountains in some place in the Soviet Union. I can't pronounce it. The capital was Yekaterinburg, something like that. And Jason notes it's where the Romanovs were executed, same place.
Oh, maybe they're haunting the area.
It might have been, although that was 50 years later, 40 years later.
Whatever.
Now, Igor,
well,
he hopped off.
Did he have a hump?
He was a 23-year-old radio engineer student, Brandy. He assembled a group of 9 others, 8 men and 2 women. No, yeah. 8 men, 2 women, for a trip, most of whom were fellow students at the university. So these are, you know, college, crazy college kids. Spring break.
Somewhere cold.
Up in the Ural Mountains.
Yeah, it's silly.
I'd go to Daytona myself, but.
Right, you know.
You know, whatever floats your boat. Anyway.
This.
Now, each member, here answers your question. Each member of the group were experienced grade 2 hikers. I suppose that's good.
How do you measure that?
Well, there's apparently different grades, and they're grade 2. Which I assume is better than grade 1, or I don't know, sometimes that goes backwards. You know, it's like felonies.
I don't know. I feel like if you can walk at all, that's grade 1. Yeah. I mean.
Well, apparently.
And who grades it?
They forgot to put their clothes on going out sub-zero rare. So you think that they might get that certification revoked. But anyway, they were experienced skiers. Now, a note here that Jason had, the old Soviet system of grading hikers has been since supplanted by a new one.
Oh, there's a new system. Why?
And grade 2 means you've gone over rock, snow, ice, and at least 100 miles in the frozen tundra. So, you know, they've been around the block.
Wait, wait a minute. So for all intents and purposes, you are a grade 2 hiker.
I am, because I've been over rock. What else did I say?
Snow,
ice.
And walked over 100 miles.
Yeah. I would be considered a grade 2 hiker.
I guess I would be too.
In that system.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I feel good about that.
I'm going to put that on my business card.
I want to be introduced as that from now on.
I will introduce you on the show as a grade 2 hiker.
I would appreciate
now,
that.
This is the old Soviet system.
Well, whatever.
It doesn't exist anymore.
But it works for me.
All right. Sorry. Thank you, Jason, for including that trivia.
Yeah.
That explains a lot. All right. So the goal of the expedition was to reach a town, or a mountain, I guess, Oriton, which was 6.2 miles north of where this incident occurred. So they were, you know, 6 miles away from being through this trek. This route in February was estimated as a Category 3. So don't take Category 2 hikers to hike a Category 3.
Grade,
yes.
That seems ill-advised.
Well, apparently it was, as things turn out. Now, if they made it, then they'd been Grade 3 hikers, wouldn't they?
I would think so.
Yeah, they got promoted. But at last they did.
God, it's a little harsh.
The most difficult, and the members of the, this is, you know, the Category 3 is the most difficult, and the members of the expedition would have received their Grade 3 certification upon their return. But, of course, they didn't return, so.
Timmy.
Don't get that little certificate.
Jesus.
But maybe they got a.
Maybe got an honorary Grade 3.
A participation trophy, maybe.
Maybe.
The members of this expedition were a bunch of Russian names that I can't pronounce, but I'm going to give you, like, their first names, okay?
All right.
There were Igor that I just mentioned, right?
Yes.
He kind of got all this together, right?
So blame Igor.
There was a guy named Yuri. Now, there's 3 people named Yuri. Yuri 1, Yuri 2, and Yuri 3.
All right.
So, hell, that takes up half the group.
Right. A lot of Yuris.
There's a woman named Ludmilla.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
And there was someone named Alexander. That's kind of nice. Zinade, which I think was the other woman. Nicola, or it might have been the woman. I don't know. Rustin and Zinada. And I have no idea. I know they've screwed up all those names.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yes.
I can't even speak English, let alone Russian. So I don't know why fuck Jason chooses story. But anyway,
yeah.
The group arrived by train in Ivdel, which is a city in this location. So they were going to hike from this city to Oriton, the mountain, right?
Right.
And they took a truck from this city to a village called Vizha. And this is the last inhabited settlement in the North Urals. Okay. While spending the night in Zina, whatever the hell the name of this place is, the skiers purchased extra food supplies for their trek. So they're proving to be pretty responsible grade 2 hikers.
Thus far.
On January 27, 1959, they begin their journey from Oriton to Vizhaly, wherever this place is. On January 28th, the next day, Yuri number 3, who suffers from rheumatism and congenital heart failure.
What? There's a lot happening there.
Was forced to turn back. Because remember I said they had 10 originally?
Right.
Forced to turn back due to knee and joint pain.
Well, yeah.
And he should try to have some of the Icy Hot. I think that would have helped.
Yeah, well, of course.
But anyway, he turns back. So now we're down to 2 Yuris.
Oh.
He really on
and
the
then
three,
there were
you,
two.
Really? You're on a 3 Yuri trip. You need all 3 of your Yuris. You're already starting out, you're down a Yuri. So jeez. that should have been a red flag right there.
1 Yuri down.
But the remaining group, including the other 2 Yuris, decided to continue on their trek, Brandy. Now, diaries and cameras were found around their last campsite, made it possible to track the group's route up to the day preceding the incident. And we can say this incident. We don't know what happened, right?
No, we do not.
We just know something happened because they're dead. They're dead.
Yes.
Unless it was like, you know, they just all died simultaneously of natural causes, which would seem unlikely to me. But, you know.
Eyes just don't spontaneously gouge themselves out.
I'm not a, I'm just a grade 2 hiker, so.
That's true.
What do I know?
Yeah.
January 21st, the group arrived on the edge of the highland area and began to prepare for climbing, Brandy.
Yes.
In a wooded valley, they stashed surplus food and equipment that they would use for the trip back. So that's smart.
Thinking ahead.
Yeah. You stash your food, and on the way back, you won't go hungry. You don't have to carry it the whole time.
Yes.
There's no need to carry all that food if you're going to need it on the way back.
You are correct for the 8th time.
The following day, February the 1st.
Okay.
Right before, remember that incident happened February 1st or 2nd. We don't know the exact date.
Okay. I'm ready.
You know, it's the 1st of February or the 2nd of February. Either...
Oh, my God.
It was either...
What happened, Tim?
It was either Groundhog Day Eve or Groundhog Day.
Okay.
The following day, February 1st, the hikers started to move through the pass. It seemed they planned to get over the pass and make camp on the opposite side. That makes sense.
Sure.
You don't want to make camp in the middle of the pass.
No, it gets cold and windy.
Yeah. But because of worsening weather conditions... There were snowstorms and decreasing visibility, pretty much like here.
Right.
Right today. They lost their direction, Brandy. How can you lose your direction in a pass?
Depends on how big the pass is.
It must have been a big motherfucking pass.
Well.
You lose your direction.
Let me tell you something. That is to be the scariest fucking thing. Like, no joke. That has to be terrifying.
Being a blizzard, don't know where you're going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right.
I don't even like driving in the snow.
Even if you are a grade 3 hiker, it would not be easy.
No. I don't even like driving in the snow. Like, I can't imagine having to walk. No.
Yeah, I just don't get it. You know, I told you I used to go camping a lot. Till one day I was camping in North Carolina in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up and I was damp and cold. And I had to pee. And I'm like,
fuck that noise.
Yeah, like, why?
No.
Why am I doing this?
Dave liked to camp and whitewater raft. And he's like, he goes, well, maybe I'll get some camping gear. And there's no we in this situation.
Fucking hotels?
Yeah. Dude, I'm not 12. We're not doing that shit.
I went whitewater rafting once, too. Oh, it was a disaster.
You know, like, I admire.
People had drowned like the week before we got there.
Of course they did.
It was flooded. And they wasn't supposed to run
because
it was above, you know, it was like they were like a level 6. And you're like, you're not supposed to go above a level 5.
Right.
But anyway, and, you know, I don't swim. So
I did not know. Why would you go whitewater rafting if you don't swim?
Question. That's a question I ask myself quite often.
The fuck? And why can't you swim?
Because
you can learn on the internet.
No, I almost drowned when I was little.
So maybe you should learn to swim.
No. But anyway, I'm going on this trip down in New River in West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And the OSHA's there. They're investigating the company that we're going down with.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm a little freaked out because we're camping out the night before, and then we're supposed to go down the river the next day. And it's like a 6-hour trip.
Yeah.
And the people who had drowned, the guy who had drowned they had gone the week before, did the same thing we did, only this guy dies like an hour into the trip, and they have to put his body back in the raft because, you know, they picked
right,
him up at the
right.
bottom of the river. So these guys were, you know, they went 5 hours with this dead body.
I bet that puts a damper on the whole trip.
They said that it was weird because people they were like wanting to hit the holes and stuff because I know it seemed weird to me. This is our friend dead in the boat. But anyway, get back to my point.
Would you?
So I'm going. You get to meet the guides the day before,
mm-hmm.
and I mean these guys are like out of Deliverance, right? They got long hair,
sure.
and beards and all. That. So I'm trying to find one that's not really a Yahoo. So I get this guy. He's got military kind of haircut. He was the captain of the group.
Uh-huh.
He seemed responsible. So I said, you know, I'm a little worried. I don't swim. And he's like, swimming's not going to help you anyway because if you get knocked out of the boat and the water's so high, you're probably, you know, it's not going to help you. So. But he said, you go in my boat. I'm the lead boat. Go in my boat. I'll make sure we don't tip over. So I said, okay, I trust this guy. Well, what he didn't tell me is as the lead boat, you go down first so you can help.
That would be the point of the lead boat.
Yeah. Well, you do that so that if anyone else tips over, you can help them.
Right.
But if you tip over, there's no one down there to help you.
Right.
So it was quite scary. And a lot of our group did, a lot of the boats in our group tipped over, but ours didn't. So.
Well, great. See, so he...
I'm here. Well, here I am.
And he...
I was not a grade 2 hiker at the time.
Well, no. And, you know, he followed through on his promise.
He did. He was very responsible. But he yelled at us, man. It was like, they didn't take no shit when they tell you...
Well,
know,
no. There's things you got to do to be safe.
Yeah,
they don't play.
They don't play.
You know what, though? I admire people that, you know, love to hike and they love to do it. I just... Especially in the cold. I don't want to be out in the cold.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Not like the colonel. He's out shooting that stationary object out in the cold today.
He might be doing it inside.
Maybe. He should not take the gun inside. That's should not be that. That seems inappropriate to me. Anyway, back to these idiots hiking across Russia.
Why? What?
Oh, my God. Victims, right. I'm sorry. But they're Russian. We don't like Russians that much.
Oh, my God.
All right, so anyway, these poor souls were hiking. These poor grade 2 hikers.
Yeah, and they got a blizzard. They're trying to go through the pass.
Blizzard's going on. They're trying to get across this pass. They don't know where they're going. Now, they could have went downhill just a little less than a mile. That's 1.5 kilometers for those of you on the metric system, Brandy.
Sure.
And there was a forest area where they could have found shelter. And got out of the elements. But they didn't do that.
Well, they didn't know, I'm sure.
You remember Yuri number 3, he dropped out of the expedition.
Right, right. I bet he's glad now.
It was a wise decision. But he said that, you know, that had they done that, they would have been okay. But they didn't.
Clearly.
You know, we all have to live by the choices we make. And apparently that wasn't a good one. So the bad weather, you know, it slowed their progress, you know, slower than they planned. But their last diary entries, remember they had diaries.
Right.
They reflected high spirits, Brandy. So they were in a good mood.
Well, they're in college. Freezing. This is an adventure.
Right. Yeah. But there's only two women. That suck.
Well, depends on who you are, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, you have to beat out like 8 other guys, or at least 7 other guys.
Do you, though?
Yeah, you really do. I don't even know. They might have even been attractive women. We don't know. Sometimes Russian women are not that attractive.
Oh, my God.
I'm just saying. No, no offense to our Russian listeners.
Clearly, I'm sure they're not offended.
If Chuck was here, he would have said something inappropriate. He'd been on the Canadian.
I expect better from you.
All right. Before leaving the university, Yuri Dotloff, the guy that got it all together, he had told the sports club that he would send a telegram as soon as the group returned to the city. Okay, so as soon as they got back to this little village, they would send a telegram after their...
letting everybody know they were all right.
Yeah, after their hike, right?
Sure.
It was expected no later than February 12th, which, of course, I believe is President Lincoln's birthday. But I could be wrong. Not that day, of course. That was 1959. President Lincoln had already been dead. But, I mean, he would have been celebrated.
Sure.
That day.
Probably not by the Russians.
Probably not. But anyway, the guy who started this trip, Yuri number one, mm-hmm. he told Yuri number three that he would send them this telegram letting them know that they made it. When February 12th passed and no messages were received, there was no immediate reaction. They just thought that it was delayed, right?
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, if they got caught up in something, maybe they went bar hopping. It was spring break.
By March 1st, people were starting to wonder.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, it was before then. It was not until the relatives of the travelers demanded a rescue operation on February 20th that the head of the institute first sent a rescue group in to try to figure out where these, you know, find these kids, right? And they're young college students. Now, later, the Army and the local police forces became involved. I bet they have a crackjack local police force in the Ural Mountains.
Hey, you know, I bet this wasn't their first rodeo getting some college kids out of the pass.
Probably not. So they got planes involved. They got helicopters involved. All are flying over trying to find these.
What about the KGB?
See, I don't know. Maybe you think Natasha and Boris?
Boris?
Yeah.
Well, they should have.
Yeah. They should have been out there.
They should have been out there.
I like Boris's raincoat. I like that. And his hat. That's
yes.
A sharp look. I'm going to bring that look back.
He's dressed as a flasher.
Well, maybe he flashed. Although, you know, Natasha was taller than him.
Yes.
So
by
I don't
quite
know
a bit.
Why she would be attracted to Boris.
Maybe he had a big dick.
Maybe. You think Boris was hung?
Someone
has to explain it.
Exactly.
Either that or...
that's as good as anything else.
He may have some incriminating information with her because he was with the KGB.
That's true.
But so was she. She was the Red Sparrow, I think, Natasha.
Ah.
I want to see that movie. I just don't see Jennifer Lawrence as a Russian spy, though.
Yeah.
She's from Kentucky, for Christ's sake.
She is.
On February 26th, so this is, almost 3 weeks after the disappearance.
Right.
The searchers found the group's abandoned and badly damaged tent. So, not looking good, Brandy. The campsite baffled the search party. You ever been baffled?
I'm all the time.
Now, this guy named Michaela, the student who found the tent. The tent was half torn down and covered with snow, Brandy.
Well, probably because it had been snowing.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's the conclusion that I would come down. But, you know, it was half torn down, so we don't know why that occurred.
Maybe the snow tore it down.
It was empty, all except for the group's belongings and shoes that were left behind. So they ran out of their tent with no shoes on.
I think you sleep with your shoes on if you're in that situation.
Eight or nine sets of footprints left by people who were wearing only socks. A single shoe, or even bare feet. So someone didn't have any shoes. Some had bare feet.
Somebody had one shoe on.
Someone had one shoe on. And it led toward the edge of a nearby forest. It was about almost a mile away to the northeast. At the forest edge, under a large cedar, the searchers found the visible remains of a small fire, along with the first two bodies. Those of Yuri number one and Yuri number two.
The Yuris died together.
Yes.
Your eyes,
yeah. Now, they were shoeless and dressed only in their underwear.
Huh.
Perhaps they had, I don't know if it was boxers or briefs.
Not
important. I hope it was long underwear.
Well, you would hope.
The branches on the trees were broken up to 16 feet high.
Jesus.
Suggesting that one of the skiers had climbed up to look for something, perhaps the camp. So they had their camp, their tent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they're away from there. They run out of their tent, and it doesn't look like they can get back, because it's a blizzard, there's
right.
snow.
And they're, you know,
they
half naked.
Yeah, they don't know where their tent is, right? They don't have a GPS. They're out there all just in,
willy-nilly.
Willy-nilly out in the Ural Mountains. You don't go out in the Ural Mountains unless you know where you're going. Go right there and right back.
That's my philosophy.
All right, so between the cedar tree and the camp, searchers found three more dead bodies. Igor, remember him?
Mm-hmm.
Zenadea, which I think is the other woman.
Woman.
And Rustin, who seemed to have died in poses suggesting that they were attempting to return to the tent. I don't know what that means. I guess they were kind of, you know, looked like they were heading that direction. They were found separately at distances of 300 meters or 900 feet. So maybe they were like in a line. I don't know. But anyway, searching for the remaining four travelers took more than 2 months.
Jeez.
So they found five, four of them still
right.
missing. Now, the four were finally found on May 4th under 13 feet of snow
Jeez.
In a ravine that was 246 feet deep into the woods from the cedar tree.
Jesus.
Now, these last four they found were better dressed than the others. Now, I don't know if that means they had more clothes on or they were just a little snappier dressing. I don't know.
Designers.
Yeah. But anyway, they were better dressed, according to Jason. And there were signs that those who died first had apparently given up their clothes to the others.
So. Well, that's nice. I don't know that I would do that.
Not willingly.
No, I feel like, you know what, I bet they just waited, after they died, they just took their clothes off of them.
You think? You think they waited for them to die?
Well, no, I mean.
All right, so the Signon is one of the hikers, and Ludmila, who was the other woman, had on a fox coat and hat. So
a what?
Fox, a faux.
A faux fox.
Faux fox. while her foot, Lydia Miller, whatever the fuck her name is, was wrapped in a piece of Uri's number two wool trousers. So she wrapped her foot in the man's pants.
Uri number two, who was under the cedar tree.
Yes.
Well, how the fuck did that happen?
Well, that's why it's a fucking mystery. So she's got his wool trousers wrapped around her foot.
Was her foot damaged, or was she just trying to keep it warm?
I think she's trying to keep it warm. So, theoretically, what may happen, as you suggested, is that Uri, too, had perished, and they got all their clothes, and she didn't have any shoes, so she wrapped his pants around her feet.
Do you think they found Uri's? They found the Uri and then just tried to keep hiking?
Maybe.
Okay.
Now, he's got a note here. It says, images of the discovery, the bodies that they were found before the autopsy, can be found online.
No.
So thank you, Jason, for that side note.
Yes.
A legal inquest started immediately, Brandy.
Yeah.
After finding the first of five bodies in February. A medical examination found no injuries which may have caused death. And it was eventually concluded that all had died from hypothermia. The Rustin guy, who had been found on the path between the forest and the tent, had a small crack in his skull, but was not thought to be the fatal wound. So, you know, perhaps it was an old football injury. Who knows?
Well, or he fell.
Yeah, or something happened to him after he died. But they don't think it had anything to do with his death.
Okay.
Okay, so an examination of four bodies, which were found in May, the ones that were away from the further away.
Mm-hmm.
Three of those hikers were found to have fatal injuries. Nikolai had major skull damage, and both Lidmila and Simon, I don't know these names, had major chest fractures.
Oh.
You know, that's a problem.
Yeah,
Chest fractures. According to this doctor, Bohr, somebody, the force required to cause such damage would have been extremely high, comparing it to the force of a car crash.
Oh, geez.
I thought he had a car wash here, and I'm like, that don't make any sense.
No, that would not.
Yeah, but it was the force of a car crash, so I don't know if they were driving the car out there in the Ural Mountains, but it had that same type of
That would have been better than walking.
Yes. Notably, the bodies had no external wounds related to the bone fractures, as they had been subjected to a high level of pressure. Okay, so something's wrong here, right? However, it should be noted that the fall in the ravine where the bodies were found was about 10 to 17 feet, and there were large blocks in the area where the hikers would have landed. So it's theoretically possible that fall could have caused it.
Or wouldn't the pressure of the snow cause that? I mean, 13 feet of snow's on top of them.
Yeah, or the other one of the theories we'll get to later is an avalanche. So
right.
But Cirque du Soleil?
Mm-hmm.
You know the guy died the other day? He just fell 20 feet. That doesn't seem like that's far.
He must have hit at a weird angle.
Because it doesn't seem that far, right? 20 feet's not that far.
I don't know. Are these 9-foot ceilings?
Yeah, it's probably like falling from there, our ceiling. Twice, I mean, we're...
No, it would be pretty far.
Like three of us, basically.
Well, it would be like falling from... It would be higher than the roof. Well, no. It would be like climbing and jumping off the roof of this building.
Okay. Okay. We're in a small... I mean, it's a small building.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so that may account for these injuries. However, major external injuries were also found on Ludmila, who was missing her tongue, eyes, part of her lips, as well as facial tissue and a fragment of her skull bone.
That is suspect.
Okay. She had an excessive skin maceration, which is a softening of the skin tissue due to prolonged moisture exposure.
Yeah.
And that could be just the exposure, maybe being outside.
Right.
For long. It was claimed that she was found laying face down in a small stream that ran under the snow, and that her external injuries were in line with the wet environment and were unlikely related to her death. So there were initial speculations that the local indigenous people called the Mansi may have attacked and murdered a group.
Are they violent people?
For encroaching upon their land. Well, you know, they're territorial. People are territorial. Look how you are with your Pop-Tarts. But investigations indicate that the nature of their death did not support this hypothesis that these natives were attacked the group. The hikers' footprints alone were visible, and they show no sign of hand-to-hand struggle. At the time, the verdict was that the group members all died because of a compelling natural force. The inquest officially ended in May of 1959 because they just couldn't figure out why these people had died. So the files were sent to an archive, and photocopies of the case became available only in the 1990s. So, what, 30 years? This case pretty much was cold. Although some... You get that? The cold.
Yeah, got it. Yeah. Very funny.
Although some parts of the of this case were missing, some of the evidence were missing when they pulled these records. The files have since been posted online, and the following information can be found in them. Okay, I'm going to give you a list of things that you find online about this. Six of the group members died of hypothermia and three of fatal injuries. There were no indications of other people nearby this where they were at.
Right.
The tent had been ripped open from the inside. The victims had died 6 to 8 hours after their last meal. Because I guess they can do an autopsy and know how you know your food is digested or whatever. Traces from the camp showed that all group members left the campsite on their own accord on foot. Released documents contain no information about the conditions of the skiers' internal organs. I wonder if they even did autopsies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Since the 1990s and the opening of the former Soviet Union, of course, this Iron Curtain fell in 1989, so they're more open. They were more open for a while anyway. The mystery has attracted widespread attention. This is really, we thought maybe this would be a good topic for Haunted Visions because of the paranormal implications. Other details were also released by witnesses in the 1990s. So here's some other details. 12-year-old Yuri...
He's 12?
Kuntsevich.
Okay.
Who later became the head of this foundation that they have for these hikers. He recalled that their skin had a deep brown tan to it, which is kind of odd.
Yeah.
Discoloration. However, you know, discoloration is not, I guess, that abnormal. The body's been out exposed for any length of time. Another group of hikers, 31 miles south of where the incident was reported, said they saw a strange orange spear in the night sky on the night of the incident. They saw similar lights were observed in nearby communities from February to March 1959. By various independent witnesses, including the Weather Service and the military. However, these sightings were not noted in the initial investigation in 1959. So there's some, you know, and that's had led to speculation that UFOs were involved or it may have been a meteor that killed them. In 1990, a former police officer who led the official inquest in 1959 published an article which included his admission that the investigation team had no rational explanation for the accident. I don't know what happened. He also stated that his team reported they had seen flying objects and they received direct orders from high-ranking regional officials to dismiss the claim. However, famous Russian mountaineer, somebody, Boyanov, says he found no verifiable reports of UFOs in the Urals on the dates that the incident occurs. So we have a mystery, Brandy.
We do.
Tell us some of the theories that people have put forth to explain this very puzzling circumstance. I'm rubbing my chin.
Great. So some of the theories that were put forth, the first theory is that there was an avalanche.
Okay. That means snow falling down from the hills.
It does. They don't. So the theory that the avalanche caused the hiker's death was championed by American author Benjamin Rafford, as quoted here. So this is a quote from his book or whatever. Okay. The group woke up in a panic and cut their way out of their tent, either because an avalanche had covered the entrance to their tent or because they were scared that an avalanche was imminent. They were poorly clothed because they had been sleeping and ran to the safety of the nearby woods where trees would help slow the oncoming snow. In the darkness of night, they got separated into two or three groups. One group made a fire while the others tried to return to the tent to recover their clothing, but it was too cold and they all froze to death before they could locate their tent in the darkness. The group of four, whose bodies were recovered in the ravine, were severely damaged by the avalanche and buried under 13 feet of snow, more than enough to account for the compelling natural force the medical examiner described.
Yeah, but what I can't figure out is, like, because they said that one group that they found later, they had died. They didn't die at the same time, they didn't think.
Well,
it seems like, you know, if it was an avalanche, it seems like it would all die instantaneously.
Not unless they all got buried,
right?
Which they did not. Dubonina's tongue was likely removed by scavengers and ordinary predation.
See, you got to watch out for scavengers because they'll cut the tongue right out of your mouth.
They'll take everything. Mm-hmm. So evidence that contradicts the avalanche theory includes...
Yes.
The location of the incident did not have any obvious signs of an avalanche. An avalanche would have left certain patterns and debris distributed over a wide area. The first five bodies were covered with a very shallow layer of snow, and had there been an avalanche of sufficient strength to sweep away the second party, those bodies would have been swept away as well. This would have caused more serious and different injuries in the process and would have damaged the tree line. An analysis of the terrain, the slope, and the incline indicates that even if there could have been a very specific avalanche that circumvents the other criticisms, its trajectory would have bypassed the tent. It had collapsed laterally, not horizontally.
Oh, that's important.
Duh.
Hey, you know what weird is? You ever see, like, on Mount Everest where they have the dead bodies?
Yeah, people just walk past them.
They use them like landmarks.
Yeah, that would freak me out. Igor was an experienced skier, and the much older Alexander was studying for his master's certification in ski instruction and mountain hiking.
So he was close to being a certified three.
I didn't know you could get a master's in ski instruction. Neither of these two men would have been likely to camp anywhere in the path of a potential avalanche.
You would think so if he's a master.
You would think. Another hypothesis, popularized by Donnie Eicher's 2013 book, Dead Mountain, is that wind going around the Holtatchel mountain created a Carmen Vortex Street.
Ooh, you got to watch out for the Carmen Vortex Street.
Or Caraman or whatever, Vortex Street.
You got to watch it out for it regardless.
Well, which can...
No matter how you pronounce it, you got to watch out for it.
Well, which can produce infrasound, capable of inducing panic attacks in humans.
So this was a massive panic attack.
In the simplest terms, I'm going to say Caraman.
Okay.
A Caraman vortex street is an oscillating pattern that emerges when a fluid or gas, in this instance wind, flows around a suitably shaped object.
Okay.
In this instance, a topographical feature, the mountains. When they occur on such a large scale, these wind patterns can theoretically generate a very low frequency sound waves that have been blamed.
Like a dog whistle.
Yeah. That have been blamed for harmful psychological and physiological symptoms in human beings. According to a 2001 review of the medical literature by the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, such symptoms can range from annoyance to fatigue to nausea. According to Eicher's theory, the infrasound generated by the wind as it passed over the top of the mountain was responsible for causing physical discomfort and mental distress in the hikers.
So it's kind of like a...
Dog whistle. It really, yeah.
Yeah, a dog whistle. But I mean, it's kind of like a mass hallucination or something. It affects them mentally.
Yes.
It disorients them or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Eicher claimed that because of their panic, the hikers were driven to leave the tent by whatever means necessary and fled down the slope. By the time they were further down the hill, they would have been out of the infrasound's path and would have regained their composure, but in the darkness would have been unable to return to their shelter. The traumatic injuries suffered by three of the victims were the result of their stumbling over the ledge of the ravine in the darkness and landing on the rocks at the bottom.
Hmm. Eventually you stop.
Well, right. There are records. So there's also a theory that it was a military test.
Okay.
There are records of parachute mines being tested by the Russian military in the area the time when the hikers were there.
Yeah, this would have been at the height of the Cold War, right?
Mm-hmm.
Late 1950s.
Parachute mines detonate a meter or two before they hit the ground and produce similar damage to those experienced by the hikers. Heavy internal damage with very little external trauma. There were also glowing orbs reported in the sky in that general vicinity, possibly caused by such an ordnance.
So that was like a neutron bomb. Remember they had a neutron bomb?
I remember the neutron dance.
Yeah, it's kind of like neutron dance. Only the neutron bomb would kill people but not harm buildings.
Oh.
Or structures or whatever.
This theory claims that as part of a cover-up, the bodies and tents were moved. Photos of the tent showed that it was apparently erected incorrectly, something that these experienced hikers are unlikely to have done. This theory...
Well, they were only grade two.
Well, this theory in particular, when combined with the speculation about radiological weapons, is partly based on the findings of radioactivity on some of the clothing as well as the bodies, being described by relatives as having orange skin and gray hair.
Yeah, because remember they talked about the discoloration of skin,
uh-huh,
and that there's some radioactivity on some of the body. That's weird.
However, radioactive dispersal would have affected all of the hikers and equipment instead of just some of it. And the skin and hair discoloration can be explained by a natural process of mummification after 3 months of exposure to the cold and winds. Plus, no one has ever been able... Plus, no one has ever been able to agree how severe the radioactive readings were. Furthermore, the initial suppression of files regarding the group's disappearance by Soviet authorities, is sometimes mentioned as evidence of a cover-up. But the concealment of information regarding domestic incidents was standard procedure in the USSR and therefore far from peculiar. And by the late 1990s, all Detalia files, some incomplete, had been released. Then we have the theory of paradoxical undressing.
Paradoxical undressing is a problem, Brandy.
I guess. International Science Times posted that the hikers' deaths were caused by hypothermia, which can induce a behavior known as paradoxical undressing, in which hypothermic subjects remove their clothes in response to perceived feelings of burning warmth.
They say before you freeze to death, right before you freeze to death, you start feeling warm.
Yeah. That 6 out of the 9 hikers died of hypothermia is undisputed. However, others in the group appeared to have acquired additional clothing from those who had already died, which suggests that they were of sound enough mind to add layers. However,
see, I don't think, I mean, I get that, but I don't think it happens to everyone at once. You know what I mean? That doesn't seem likely.
However, there's no explanation for how this behavior could happen to all 9 hikers at the same time.
I swear to God, I didn't know. I didn't step on you there.
You kind of did steal that thunder. All right. So other theories So Donnie Eicher's back. And who had championed the infrasound theory discussed above, he made a documentary about the incident, evaluated several other theories that are deemed unlikely or have been discredited. One of them is that they were attacked by Mansi or other local tribesmen. But those local tribesmen were known to be peaceful and there was no track evidence of anyone approaching the tent. Another theory, they were attacked and chased by animal wildlife. But there were no animal tracks, and the group would not have abandoned the relative security of the tent. High winds blew one member away, and the others attempted to rescue the person. That's some heavy-duty wind. A large, experienced group would not have behaved like that.
Yeah, here's the thing. If you're out camping in the Ural Mountains, and one of your colleagues get blown away, don't go out chasing.
Well, a large experienced group would not have behaved like that, and wind strong enough to blow away people with such force would have also blown away the tent.
Good point.
An argument possibly related to a romantic encounter that left some of them only partially clothed led to a violent dispute.
Oh, so there may have been some shenanigans going on.
Well, the rebuttal.
Well, there were more men than they were women.
Well, but the rebuttal to this, Eicher states that that is highly implausible. By all indications, the group was largely harmonious, and sexual tensions were confined to platonic flirtation and crushes. There were no drugs present, and the only alcohol was a small flask of medicinal alcohol found intact at the scene. The group had even sworn off cigarettes for the expedition. Furthermore, a fight could not have left the massive injuries that one body had suffered. All nine victims were buried in Yekaterinburg Cemetery, and there's a large memorial to them there. On July 1st, 2016, a memorial plaque was inaugurated in Solokhmusk in Ural's Perm region, dedicated to Yuri Yudin, the sole survivor of the expedition group.
That was Yuri number one.
That was Yuri number three.
Number three.
Who died. Yes. Yeah. Who died in 2013.
Okay, so, wow, that's a weird story. Brandy, what's your thoughts on this very compelling story?
That's why I don't hike.
Well, what's your guess?
I don't know, dude. That stuff's weird to me and so creepy.
Well, I did see I watched a couple documentaries just to kind of, because I didn't do the research on this, it was Jason's
time. Right.
And I watched a couple of documentaries, and I thought one was kind of interesting, and he didn't mention it in the theory, so I'll throw it out there. They had a stove in their tent,
okay,
and they had it was like a pipe stove, and a pipe was mm-hmm. coming out. One of the theories is that
it's a hell of a tent.
The pipe became loose,
yeah,
and then the smoke started filling the tent. So
they all bolted.
Yeah, they used a knife to slash the tent before really thinking about, oh, fuck, what are we going to do now?
Right.
And then they ran, and they couldn't get back to even where the tent was. That's one of the theories, but there's no mention of any fire or anything like that.
Well, why would you run? Just cut the hole and step out.
Well, I guess, panic. And, if you're in a tent out in the woods and it starts filling up with smoke— I mean, I can see people panicking.
Well, I can see panicking to get out, but once you're out and outside.
Oh, yeah, but once they got out, they realized what they had done. Maybe they was trying to get away from the tent. They're afraid it's going to catch fire or whatever. But then they realized what they had destroyed the tent when they.
Yeah, they ran a mile away. They're not that scared.
I don't know. It seemed a reasonable explanation.
It's not.
All right. You prefer to think that an alien has abducted
them. I would prefer that over that stupid theory.
All right. Let's see what our folks. If you have a theory on this case, mention it on our Facebook group. It's History Dweebs, the podcast. Come on there and tell us what you think happened.
So we have a Patreon list.
Yes, we do. And
Chuck
lost it. We were supposed to have it ready to go, and Chuck is out of town. So
and of course, lost it.
If we miss you on this list, we're very, very sorry. But there's a couple of people, Brandy, I know where it's not on your updated list. We've got Bridget Clavey there. We've got Per Westerman. Per Westman donated $6.66. 666.
Nice, Per.
Yes, thank you, Per. And then you're going to get – so if we miss you, giving you a shout-out here, we'll really apologize. We'll get – Kim Stroop, too, is also
– We're blaming Chuck.
We're blaming Chuck. Thank you, Kim. But Brandy's going to give us a shout-out of all those that we have.
So, let's start with...
Let me say, if you would like to donate to us, you can do so by going to patreon.com/historydweebs, where you can give a little, you can give a lot, or...
Just a wee tiny bit.
Yes, thank you, Brandy.
Yeah, okay.
Continue.
All right, so we want to thank James Seabright, Tommy Lane, Jason Dykes, Terry Stafford, Shelley Garrett, Bridget Clavey, that Tim already
thank you,
called,
Bridget.
Brandy McBride, Jennifer Savoda, Maggie Glover, Mike Sadler, Jamie Dent, Maja, Tyrone, Amber Scoville, Marsha Boris, Stacy Alsop, Jody and Sean Wells, Amber Anderson, Ben and Rosanna from They Walk Among Us, Lorna Violet, Mike Deo, Kelly Charette, Karen Widner, Callie, Lauren Meredith, Jessica Greeno, Mike Brown with the Pleasing Terrors podcast.
Great podcast.
Mm-hmm. Sarah Bloom, Amber Krupp, the Now American History podcast with Joe Hopkins and Sean. Catherine Cockgarage Richardson, Fiona Crisp, Laura O'Reilly, Christine Bourgeois, Aaron, Kimberly Cameron, Elise, The History Goes Bump podcast with Diane Student, Annette Petre, Lise Jahara, Alicia and Chip, Marika Smith, Jeff and Don Chestnut, who do Backroads to History and Poems by Jeff, Karen Barnes, Rachel Flynn, Shirley Strapp, Todd Long, Lydia Fisher, Phyllis Munson, Melissa Montoya, Cindy Liu, Kristen Malachinsky, Heather Poole, Adam McWaters, The Vanished Podcast, Canadian True Crime with Christy Lee, Insight with Charlie and Allie, Joe Clifford, Mistress Vader, Ron, Tracy Smith, Jess, John V, Nene, Bridget Bernhard, Stacy, Christine Hauer, Cheryl Weldon, Nicholas, Ryan, Margaret McDonald, Aaron Turner, Michelle Johns, The Trowbridges, Clark and Diane, Beth Wallen, Andrew Scamell, Michaela Wallstrom, Aaron Fowler, Liam Flanagan, and Rudy the Wonder Dog. Evidently, he gives a dollar, which is ridiculous because he has a new job.
I think it's really Chuck.
Well, can't prove it.
That's true.
Lady Beverly.
Yeah, the lovely Lady Beverly.
And, of course, the Miss Dottie Scott.
Yeah, hi, Mom. All right. Well, thank you for joining us again. Thank you, Jason, for an interesting script. I hope we didn't screw it up too bad. Join us on our Facebook page at History Dweebs, the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at History Dweebs 1. Please leave us a review if you haven't done so already. And that's all I have. Brandy, will be careful out in the snow. Please do not go out hiking in the snow this weekend because you might disappear.
No worries. I think we're safe there.
Okay. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time on History Dweebs. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.